Hey everyone, it's TJ Zuppi. Zach and I are truly hoping everyone is having a tremendous Christmas and a great holiday season. The two of us are taking this opportunity to spend a little extra time with friends and family. We hope you're getting to do the same as well. But we also realize you all have places to be, possibly hours in the car to spend, or maybe you've just got lots of holiday toys to put together. I feel your pain, and you need something to listen to. Well, we've got you. Zach and I have been building a community over at Patreon. You've heard us talk about it for a while now. Patreon.com/SelbyIsGodcast. Hundreds of you have joined us for additional Guardians content for just $1 per episode, plus some occasional live streams. We have fantasy leagues. It's been fun. We also know that not everyone's able to join us there, and that's why we've continued posting free episodes here on Apple and Spotify or wherever you're currently listening every other week during the off season. Well, since we're taking a break through the end of the year, Zach and I thought we'd share a small preview of some of our recent Patreon shows, at least for those who haven't been able to catch our weekly shows. So here's a little taste of the past month. Enjoy, and thanks for spending some time with us this holiday season. Tony says, likelihood of extending Jose. Ah, coming at this from the other side of things. If you were a betting man, give us the odds. Most likely prospects we haven't seen yet make an appearance in the majors this year. Also, does it make sense to ownership if they sign a player to a big extension or bring in a good free agent? Do they not believe it will result in people buying tickets and merch? Thank you. So let's start with the Jose thing.
It's really difficult to handicap. We talked about this earlier in the offseason, written extensively about it. It's hard because there's a lot of moving parts. You know, he would love to stay in Cleveland for the rest of his career. And I say that knowing everybody says that, but it's legit with him. But he also wants to get paid. And it's tough because he jumped at that opportunity for immediate security. And yeah, it's made him the league's best bargain for a while. And he should continue to be that for a couple more years. So it's tough. I mean, there could be some middle ground if you scrap up the two option years, and you're going to have to pay him more than you've ever paid anybody. And I'll remain skeptical, especially without a minority investor on board yet, especially without any salary floor or major change to revenue sharing or anything like that. So it's really difficult. Believe me, I'm a betting man. I would love to put a percent on this and have everybody excited or pissed off or whatever the percent would be. It's so difficult because there's a lot that still needs to happen. And I don't know. I mean, I would put it at less than 50% for sure.
Yeah, I would too.
But I don't know.
I would put the odds higher than I ever would have put them for Francisco Lindor.
Yes. I would say go back and listen to our podcast specifically about this topic from October. But I think, like, I want to say something like 25, 30%, but don't quote me on that because, again, if a minority investor comes aboard, that can change the conversation. If there are changes to the CBA that force them to spend a little more or give them the opportunity to spend a little more without changing their personal habits, that changes the conversation. They've never really been in this position. Yeah, they could have signed Lindor. They could have signed some of the pitchers. They could have signed Jim Thome and Manny Ramirez, but their payroll can't go lower. I mean, they've never been in the situation where their payroll is what it is. They've already torn everything down. They have this opportunity to build some goodwill with the fan base at a critical juncture where you're trying to, as they said, you're trying to build up, you're trying to contend again, and you're trying to sell merchandise and make the rebrand go well. So they should be motivated to do this more than they've ever been motivated to do it with any other player. That's why I'm not saying like 10%. I don't know. I think we're all conditioned to believe it when we see it, right?
Well, yeah. I may be off base here, but I do think, you know, compared to Lindor, who was most concerned with getting the top dollar For Jose, I would anticipate he would factor in comfort where he's playing at, wanting to be in Cleveland, maybe a little bit more than Francisco ever would have. So it might not be as important to offer the just the top contract as it is just a competitive contract that would make him comfortable and keep him here for the long haul. But the other side of this is, if you knew beyond certainty that there was zero chance that he is going to sign an extension, zero chance, that the ownership's not going to allow you to, it's just not going to happen. He's not signing here, and the money's just not going to be there for you to make that offer. Does that change your outlook on what you do this offseason?
Yes, it should. This is what I've been struggling with the Ramirez to Toronto article. It's that it's not even about the offer another team would make, because they could get a lot, because you're guaranteeing 2 years of a top 10 player at a bargain rate. And any team that acquires him is probably thinking, you know what? We would give him the money he wants. So you could get a ton for him. It's just, one, you have to weigh that against just total fan apathy setting in, because you reach a point where, let's say they trade Jose. Let's say 2022 is another transition year, and 2023 with Valera debuting and Nolan Jones in the fold, and you have a better grasp for which infield setup works, and your rotation, McKenzie's another year mature, and Quantrill, like let's say the team's pretty good. Are fans going to be as invested as they were a few years ago when Jose was traded? Bieber's next up. Going to have the same conversation about him. And the year after that, it's somebody else and then somebody else. It's just, how do you weigh? Yeah, maybe you're maximizing the value of Jose Ramirez, but are you doing so much damage to the fan base that you're never going to win them back? It's really tough. And I think that the big question is, what is your timeline to contend? What is the actual...
Yeah.
If you feel... Because they already need to consolidate some prospects and fix the outfield. You've got 14 infielders on the 40-man roster.
And you know they're not trading Jose for... They're not betting on one player. That's right. Just not how they operate.
So you're going to have even more clutter that you have to sort through. So when are you actually going to win? How are you going to figure all that out? Like, if you traded Jose for a package of intriguing younger players, well, you're just going to, that picture is going to be even more muddied. You're going to have to make several more trades. And I just wonder, at what point are you going to be ready to win? Is it 2024 when Bieber's in his last season?
Yeah, that's what I've struggled with. What's the end game? Because you and I both look at this team, and I think we both come from this perspective of don't trade Jose for two reasons. One, because I still think there's a decent enough shot, at least as of right now, of signing him, because who knows what how the landscape of the ownership of this team changes over the next 2 years. I'm not ready to say that ship has sailed, that it's impossible for that to happen. And two, because we both believe, at least I think you do, based on the conversations we've had here recently, where this team is one or two moves away from putting itself in a spot to be every year in a place where they can be making the playoffs for the next several years. If they make the right move, they can get that right controllable outfielder. They make the right signing. And so when you're that close, I don't think you have to go the other way. I don't think you have to trade away Jose. Now, it does change things, I think, fairly, if you were to say there's a 0% chance. If you know he's not going to be here in 2 years or beyond 2 years, then yeah, maybe it changes my outlook a bit. But I still feel like, you know, we had this talk when we were looking at the projections. I mean, they're just coming off of a season where they had tons of injuries and guys that didn't really progress maybe the way that you thought that they should, and they still were right around a 500 team. You're telling me you can't go add 5-6 wins? That's impossible? Or that through health you don't gain one or two, and then you go buy those 3 or 4 wins either through trade or through free agency or whatever the case may be? I think this team is close enough where, hey, you can just go try. You can just go try to win right now. And it doesn't always have to be about maximizing all of your asset potential, I guess.
Yeah, it's a complicated topic. It's not.
Yeah, it should be.
It's much more nuanced and complex than any of these similar conversations have been with other players in recent years, for many reasons. So it's something we can keep revisiting. It's something that we will maybe have more clarity on once the lockout ends, and then once we get a little more idea of what ownership's going to look like, etc. So it's this won't be the last time we talk about this.
Well, let's move forward here so we can try to knock out some of these more questions. Let's see. Brad has a movie question. Name the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That went one more down. Kyle had the movie question. Best movie franchise that has way too many sequels. He mentions Home Alone, Rocky, Jurassic Park. He says you might be helpless here. I don't know. But can I give mine? I already have mine. I have it ready.
Go ahead.
It's clearly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, The Land Before Time.
I was going to say that. I said, what? I was going to say, once you get to a movie and there's a number 7 in it, like at least Fast and the Furious has had creative title changes. But isn't it just like The Land Before Time 7?
Let's see here. I was looking it up. Land Before Time 8, 2001. Huh. The Big Freeze. I mean, if it looks like a Super Bowl at the end of your movie,
they use Roman numerals.
V-I-I-I. If I'm looking at that, you probably got too many sequels. I don't know. That was sorry, I wanted to pick something that was unconventional. Apparently, you were thinking the same, but Jason wants to know about the wealth of young talent Seattle has in their outfield. What do you think it would take to pry Julio Rodriguez or Jared Kelnick out of the Emerald City? Plesac, Arias, perhaps some lower-level prospects get that done. No, I think it's going to take someone named Jose Ramirez in any trade between Cleveland and Seattle. And even so, are they trading Jared Kelnick in that deal? I'm pretty skeptical.
No, and they love Julio Rodriguez, who's a top 5 prospect in the game. And seems like he's going to be an all-star outfielder year in and year out. I actually had this conversation with some Seattle people recently who said they don't think the Mariners would do Julio Rodriguez for Jose Ramirez. So I don't.
So
I
that's a non-starter. Yeah. Hey, and I get it from Seattle's perspective. I'm not saying that they're dumb for not wanting to do that. And where is Seattle in their buildup? They do have a ton of young players that are extremely appetizing in a potential trade, but they're also a team that's ready to strike now. Should they be in a place where they're consolidating for more proven commodities? You would think that that's the case, but I don't know.
Well, they're ready to spend money.
For sure.
They already spent some on Robbie Ray. Wouldn't be surprised if they added another marquee player, whether it's Chris Bryant or someone like that. So who knows? That's a fun position to be in if you're a Seattle fan.
So do you want to talk Eric Sobrowski?
Not really.
Would you prefer to discuss Brett Daniels?
They lost one pitcher. They gained 2. That seems like a net win.
Well, Sobrowski might not be pitching for a while still. Second Tommy John surgery. Kind of an interesting character, though. I know our pal over at Guardians Baseball Insider now, Justin Latta, had tweeted another lefty here from an over-the-top delivery with a big breaking ball. But the numbers were really nice when he did pitch. Some strikeouts there. Looks like an intriguing arm if he could ever get on the field. But hey, I mean, that's what you're getting in the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. That's all I've got to go on.
Mm-hmm. They have long believed that they have a competitive advantage with like long-term injury recovery. They believe in their track record of rehabbing guys off Tommy John surgery, especially. And so it's why they've not shied away from, like, Brady Aiken is a perfect example. And I know he didn't work out, but there's a reason why they felt comfortable drafting him where they did. So that's, I think, part of the motivation behind this signing is they see a guy who's got good stuff, and that if he can recover from this injury, he can help them eventually, and they think they can help him rehab maybe more than another team would be able to. So I'm not smart enough to know what goes into that. They're obviously not going to reveal all their secrets about that, but you know, it says something that they make this pick and they're confident in why it can work. Daniels, they like, I think, as a reliever. I think they're hoping he, I mean, if you look at the composition of their roster, I don't have the numbers offhand, but it's like 2/3 of the pitchers on their 40 man are starters. And if you look at the upper level of the minor leagues, there aren't many relievers who have big league potential. So I think they feel like Brett Daniels could be one of those guys.
Yeah.
And eventually reach the major leagues as a reliever. Who knows? Maybe even as soon as 2022.
Yeah, well, we also know Cleveland likes to exhaust all of their opportunities with somebody to make sure that they are not a starter before they put them in the bullpen role. Maybe other organizations are more eager. And there are some that present themselves to be relievers pretty quickly, and you just make that determination. You know, there was no discussion really about what Nick Sandlin was going to be, right? You put that guy in the bullpen and you try to get him up to the major leagues as quick as possible. James Karinchak too. But, you know, this organization is going to give everybody every opportunity to start because that's where the most value is going to be with the pitcher. Most of them aren't going to be able to do that, let alone getting to the major leagues. But I think that's the organizational philosophy. So that's not surprising. And you are right. I mean, how confident, even losing Ruben Niebla, they have this in place now for several years. And so it's not a surprise. There's no, you know, everyone understands what the secret recipe here is, the KFC recipe for the chicken. They know how they make this pitching factory go. And so, you know, they look for what they look for. They have certain aspects of a pitcher that they like. They will focus in on those things. And because they have such a track record of being able to get guys healthy or get the most out of them, you know, I wonder, could that ever make them overconfident? You know, do they ever take too many risks because they are too confident in their ability to churn out pitching?
That's a really good question. I mean, they have algorithms and formulas and analysts in the baseball operations department studying metrics to dictate what the right moves are and the right decisions. Obviously, you're not going solely off of that, but I think that they try to strip away all emotion and biases and make sure that everyone's evaluations are objective and including the proper context. And then you're trying to, like, risk is a part of this. It's a part of everything they do, right?
Well, especially with pitching.
Yeah. And also, you have to look at the whole system, right? Like, there was a dearth of starting pitching depth in the upper level of the minors going into 2021. And it just so happened that then the major league team suffered a rash of injuries. And all of a sudden, you're going with Henches and Mejia, and you weren't expecting to do that. And so then they added Pilkington, and they added Battenfield, and they added Tobias Myers, and they drafted 20 or 19 starting pitchers over the summer, and other guys moved up through the system, and all of a sudden, there's a wealth of starting pitching depth. So, like, something like that then allows them maybe to take some more risks. So it's just that's one of the fascinating parts of just being a front office and overseeing a farm system is that timeline and making sure, especially when you're a team like Cleveland that isn't going to go and buy starting pitching, you have to make sure you have like a steady wave. So if you are going to take those risks, you can't miss very often, or there's going to be a gap in that timeline, like a pause in that pipeline, and then you're going to end up being screwed if something goes wrong.
The point that I was eventually trying to get to is, could they ever be so overconfident that they just take it for granted? And I don't think they're anywhere close to that, but, you know, do you think, oh, you could trade this guy away? You can trade someone in the back end of your rotation away because we can just create more. And at some point, maybe that's not going to be true. Maybe things don't last forever, or other teams catch up to what you're doing, so the advantage that you figure that you hold isn't as great as it once was. I don't think we're at that point yet. I mean, they still are churning out some very, if not high-level pitching candidates, certainly people that have pretty nice floors that look like they're capable of at least pitching in the major leagues and getting guys out on occasion. And when you start from that level, then you can hopefully build off of that and make them, you know, we don't like to put ceilings on anyone, just like an organization, but you know, you might be able to discover a mid-rotation starter that way. And if you build enough of those guys, and if you have a rotation full of them, maybe you don't have the star power. You got Bieber. Maybe McKenzie becomes that someday, but you at least have competent starting pitching every time you take the field. And that's kind of the philosophy that they've created for themselves. Can you ever overestimate your ability to have that factory moving?
I think that's the conversation that takes place when you consider trading away a starting pitcher this winter. I mean, Zach Plesac is the popular name to be tossed out there. We've done it. Others have done it. It just, he seems like the guy who makes sense if you're going to pick one of the five to deal away. But there's risk involved, right? I mean, who's right. Next in line? Are you confident Eli Morgan? Do you want him pitching every 5 days? Is there someone you're more intrigued with, like a Cody Morris or Logan T. Allen or any of the guys I mentioned before? Like, do you know for sure? Would you feel more confident a year from now or 6 months from now, whenever the middle of the season is, making that sort of trade? It's a good question because teams are asking about their starting pitchers. They have for years and years and years, and that hasn't changed even this winter before the lockout. But it's a risk. You're right. I mean, they learned the hard way in 2021 that you have to, if you're going to do what they did and trade away all those veteran starting pitchers, you have to have a pipeline that's head and shoulders better than everybody else's. And they did for a bit, but then there was a gap that was exposed. And so they've done a good job to fill that and to build the depth back up. But I don't know that we know quite yet that any of those options are going to be reliable in 2022.
A few weeks ago, someone sent us, I don't know where this article came from, but the article was touching on that the Cleveland front office has a reputation, and this is not the first time anyone has ever written this. It's not the first time that you and I have heard something like this coming from elsewhere outside the Cleveland front office. But the reputation is that it's not that they're necessarily difficult to deal with. It's just that they set what the parameters of what they're looking for in a trade. And oftentimes they come in with a pretty hefty price for whatever they're looking for. And they don't budge much off of it. They're not willing to come down too much off of that initial evaluation of a trade or a player's value. I think while it may hurt a trade occasionally to maybe have that sort of outlook, if you're dealing between two ends of the spectrum, if you'd rather have a front office that has a reputation of being sort of hard-headed in their discussions and evaluations, or being the team that everyone says, we really need to get something done. Hey, call up that stupid front office because they are always willing to help us out. I think it's much better to live at the hard-headed, maybe difficult-to-deal-with end of that spectrum. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think everyone right now is thinking about their fantasy league, and there's always that owner that you know they have a player you want, but you're like, oh, I don't want to reach out and have that discussion and just get that rejection and have them be an asshole and just try to work me. But then everyone has that person in the league that's like, oh, well, this guy has Derrick Henry. Well, this will be easy. He'll be on my team in 10 minutes.
Here's three crappy players for your one good player. You get exactly. Three, I get one. Look how much you're coming out on top, man.
Right. So I think this is a nuanced conversation. I think in the grand scheme, it's probably a good thing. You want to be a team that, I mean, this team is really good at winning trades, right? It's even when a trade, you're kind of skeptical at first and you're like, okay, like we'll see where you go. But like, they also seem to have a knack for trading guys who then go on and get injured and fall off a cliff. So it's that helps their case too. But they have traditionally for a long time been really good at making trades, and it's probably because of that. The only thing, the only hesitation I have is this is a team that it's critical for them to trade guys a year early instead of a year late. And you never want to let your stubbornness interfere with that, to the point where you're saying, okay, we're not going to trade player X for anything less than this. And it makes you wait until player X's value is deteriorated. And then you're stuck with, you know, something like, I mean, they almost happened with Corey Kluber. Lucky they got Emmanuel Class A out of it. But think about if they would have traded him a year earlier, what they might have gotten. So I think you probably don't want that to become a reputation that maybe deters other front offices from reaching out or wanting to have an extended dialogue with you. But I don't know that that actually happens in this sort of setting. I think that's more for us in our Selby is Godcast Fantasy Football League when I'm trying to find a damn quarterback and I can't.
I'm sorry. You know, I just can't see you from way up the top of this mountain that I've created for myself in that league. How do you feel about someone that has not been playing fantasy football for several years coming in and just demolishing you?
Yeah, how has that happened?
I don't know. I think I just got really lucky.
I've got a really good team, too, and we lose by like 3 points every week.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. Well, you're right that it's a nuanced conversation. Of course, you don't just pick between being really stupid or really hard-headed. There are probably occasions where it is maybe more difficult than someone's willing to partake in a particular day, and maybe that leads them to call up someone they have a better relationship with. But I also think, you know, Cleveland has that good relationship with a number of front offices. And the other thing to keep in mind is how many front offices have been fueled and built in part because of what has happened in Cleveland. And those relationships have grown out to other organizations. So I'm not sure how much that really gets in the way. I just think you probably come in knowing that it's going to be difficult to come in and try to fleece Cleveland and fool them and trick them. Not that a lot of that happens much anymore anyway. Everyone has some sort of advanced metrics and data and spreadsheets and evaluations. It's just so much more complicated and in-depth than it used to be. So even the teams that are on the lower portion of the smart scale are still 100 times smarter than they would have been 25 years ago. But we thank Enjoy More Radio for sending us that tweet a few weeks ago. And sorry it took a couple of weeks to get to it. But, you know, hey, it's a lockout now, so we got plenty of time to discuss any questions. So if you have more, send us a tweet, send us a note here at Patreon. We'll be happy to address it in a future episode.
It'll be interesting to see them on the other side of the equation, too, and how that factors in. You know, it's usually they've got the player, the veteran that everybody else wants, whether it's Lindor, Kluber, Clevenger, Bauer, whoever. And it's, okay, here's our price. Come meet it. But now they're the team, they're hunting for that guy. You know, they're in pursuit. So it's the Pirates who have Brian Reynolds, who they want. And if you're Cleveland, it's a little different just being on that other side of the coin. And it's not, I'm curious to see if there's any difference there. And I would, again, love to be a fly on the wall of those negotiations. Because you can be stubborn all you want, but the other team has what they need now.
Wouldn't you say, I mean, yes, a number of when we did that perfect off-season show, we bantered about a number of different names. I would say a lot of those.
Neither of us had Eniel De Los Santos, by the way.
No, we didn't. A lot of those names that we talked about are still very much available. The trades that we discussed at length are still very capable of happening. Michael Conforto is still very much out there, and we both said he's the perfect free agent fit for this team. Now,
you know, you didn't get some of your catchers that ended up going elsewhere. And did you put Knebel in your perfect offseason? I don't remember, but he ended up finding a home, so you can't bring Knebel to Cleveland. But there's still 80% of the names that we discussed in that show very much available. So I sit here and say, how can I get too upset about what has taken place to this point? I guess I can't. But at the same time, while patience has some benefits, I still 100% get everyone that's pissed off today that sits here and looks at all these other teams making these moves in this very unprecedented territory and saying, hey, Guardians, are you going to do freaking something? Or is Sandy Leon and a couple of non-roster invite pitchers all we're looking at here? You know, in years past, I would say, hey, hold on, everyone pump the brakes, give them some time. I don't know if I'm really in that position. I don't think I want to carry that load right now. I 100% get everyone that's frustrated by them not doing a damn thing. I guess I feel like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth here, where I understand where they're coming from, but I'm trying to look at this from a nuanced perspective here and say, I get why people are frustrated. We said this was a major offseason where they could utilize this to jump off and take this momentum into the next several years. And none of that has happened to this point. So I guess I'm in this show me territory. After the past several off seasons, hey, you still have the opportunity to make yourself better. But instead of saying, hey, hold on, give them time. No, I'm sitting here going, all right, what you going to do? How are you going to make this better? There's still chances for you to do it. Man, you better do something once this lockout is over.
Okay, so, and again, we go back and listen to our free episode from earlier in this week, because I think we hit the tip of the iceberg on this topic. I think the reason why you feel conflicted about this, and you feel like you're talking about both sides, out of both sides of your mouth, but you're not, is because this front office typically acts in an objective universe where they don't deal on emotions and they don't let fan investment influence what they do, because they're just trying to make the best baseball decisions under the parameters that they are given, right? However, everything we've talked about, the state of the fan base, the merchandise sales, the new team name, you have to attack this offseason with the context of all of that. And a point I made on this podcast, I made on Carmen and Lima show this week, that I just can't get over is, and even I was on with Rizzo, you know, Goldhammer loves to, you know, he was going to ask about the sign falling and the sign being off center. And it's hard to dispute that, because there's nothing else to talk about from a casual fan perspective. The only talking points with that franchise right now, except for, you know, the diehards want to hear us talk about what we think Nolan Jones might be able to do in 2022, or just how good this rotation can be. And we talk about that stuff and we appreciate the support from those diehard fans. And that's why this podcast exists. But from the standpoint of, this team needs to sell more tickets. They need to boost revenue. They need to sell Guardians merchandise because they need money so that they can field a damn team, right? And the problem is, they are the only ones who can change the narrative. They are the only ones who can get people to stop talking about the damn sign that fell off at the team shop. They're the only ones who can get people to stop looking at that off-centered sign and start looking at odds for them to win the division, right? So they have to change the narrative. They have to be the ones that take the action. And that's why I think this offseason, unlike any other, it is imperative to do something that's going to excite the fan base. And the reason why I've been so adamant that this team is going to do something, why this team is going to upgrade the outfield, is because the front office knows that it has to, right? They're not going to start Oscar Mercado in left field. Like, he's not going to be the everyday left fielder. I don't think Steven Kwan is going to be an everyday player in April 2022. they know, they've admitted the outfield needs help. They have insisted the payroll will go up. Now, I don't know if that means it'll go up to $62 million or if it'll go up to $82 million. I'm with you in that I need to see it to believe it. But if you look at the composition of the roster and all the prospects on there who can't be touched, you're not going to put Jose Tena on the 40-man just to DFA him when you sign Tommy Pham, right? Everything points to a trade. Everything points to upgrades coming. The roster is not a finished product by any means. You have like 12 starting pitchers and like four relievers on the 40-man roster, okay? There's a lot of change coming. So, but I think there was a huge missed opportunity not to do something before this lockout so that at least for, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, however long this takes, people have something positive to chew on. They have like good news that they can talk about on the water cooler or that you can hear on sports talk radio. And instead you gave them nothing. And just because, you know, there's a freeze with transactions doesn't mean there has to be a freeze with merchandise sales. But you didn't give yourself a chance to do that. So I think it was a missed opportunity.
Are they allowed to sell player merchandise?
Yeah, you can go on MLB's shop, right? And buy stuff.
So I can't see their headshot on MLB.com. And I can't read a story about them. But you can sell merchandise to make money off of them.
Is that surprising that everything boils down to money?
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think the front office needs, and this kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning with that reader question, or the listener question is, you can be stubborn and you can be set in your ways because it's been beneficial to you and you have to remain objective. You can't let outside influences affect your decision-making. But I think you have to look at things in a grander perspective this offseason just because of everything that's at stake and everything that is going on with this franchise. And in terms of that, I think part one or the first semester of this offseason, I don't think they were up to snuff. I think they failed seems like too harsh of a word, but I do think they sort of failed. And just think of the difference in, we've talked about this all the time, is the worst thing you can have is fan apathy. And you're going to have 2 months where, I keep saying 2 months, I don't know when this lockout's going to end, but I think many people in these discussions between colleagues or people in the know seem to think sometime between mid-January or mid-February this will end. And then maybe you make a bunch of moves and you get people excited at that point, but it's just, it's another 2 months where you just didn't do, you weren't allowed to do anything to get people excited. But if you would have just done something before the lockout, I think people would have been at least somewhat satisfied during this time. Instead, there's no reason for a radio station to give this team any thought. There's no reason for a fan to rush to the team shop to buy some merchandise, right? I think it's, from a fan perspective, totally understand. I'm with you. I get the frustration and the disappointment. It's hard to argue.